No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. Last week, we began a discussion about one of the major issues currently facing our nation, immigration reform. Today, we continue that discussion as we attempt to start a meaningful conversation about reforming immigration in America. This has been a hotly debated issue, and we hope you will join in the discussion by calling or texting your questions or comments to us at 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471, or you can Skype us at BBS Radio 2. We are fortunate to have as a guest today, Gus West. Mr. West is the president and chairman of the board of the Hispanic Institute. He has a distinguished career in local and national government service that spans more than 20 years, and among other things, he manages a Washington-based government affairs consulting firm that he started. Before we talk to him, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who is joining us from the great state of Arizona, which is at ground zero in this debate about immigration. Hi, Kathleen. As always, thanks for helping get the conversation started.
Hi, Senator. I'm Kathleen Gomez. Welcome to Shadow Politics. We have discussed some of the issues surrounding immigration, such as border security and what we think about the debate in Washington as it now stands. Today, however, we begin a discussion with professionals of divergent views in an effort to get a productive conversation going with America about this important issue. And I just want to say before I introduce my guest that I just came back from Douglas, which is on the border, and myself, my sister, and two of our friends, my niece, and a big Great Dane dog were walking literally on the border. My sister's ranch is right there, and we were taking a stroll, doing our walk, and it was amazing. Within seconds, we had four or five border patrols, you know, kind of following us, and there was a helicopter above, and, you know, before we could even... I mean, it was just pretty amazing how quick these guys were out there. They had actually just caught two people, I think, who were crossing over. And within literally minutes, they were in front of us, behind us. There was cars on, you know, the other sides of the hill. So as I left Douglas, I found it interesting that we were going to be talking about this issue being right from the border. And now it's with great pleasure to introduce Gus West. I met Gus while working on the Democratic National Convention in New York City in 1992, and we worked together, and it was a great pleasure. Hi, Gus. How are you doing today?
Hello, Kathleen. Hello, Michael. How are you?
Good. Good to hear from you, Gus. It's been a while. It was Charlotte, North Carolina, I think, that the last time all three of us saw each other.
That's right. We always run into each other at these places. It's great. You know, it was really nice. But, Gus, tell us what exactly is the Hispanic Institute?
Yes, I'll tell you about it. Kathleen said we worked together, but she was actually my boss in 92, so.
I wouldn't be bragging about that, Gus.
She was a good boss.
I was a good boss, and it led him onto greater and bigger things, you know? What can I say? I kind of stayed. My friends are like, you know, Senator Brown, and we kind of stayed behind. But I am so happy that you've done so much in your, you know, quite the expert on a lot of these issues. And I was just looking at the website of the Hispanic Institute. You guys do a lot of things. You just don't do immigration. You do obesity within the Hispanic community. And I was just amazed, all the stuff you were talking about, internet capabilities available to Hispanics. But since we asked you, I mean, you had just recently written, I think, an article about the immigration reform, right?
Yeah, we've published a lot of op-eds and, you know, trying to prod the, you know, the political leaders here in Washington to do more on that front. We formed the Hispanic Institute in 2005. It was sort of a reaction to a lot of the what we felt anti-immigrant, anti-Latino sentiment that was out there. And my fellow board members, originally there was six of us, and we were all had served in the Clinton administration, and one person had even served in the Carter administration. But we felt that, you know, we wanted to form this organization, and there were certain things that weren't being said, and we felt that, you know, if another organization was doing it also, then perhaps we would have an impact, and also that the population was growing so fast, that Hispanic population, that there was room for another organization. We focus on three areas that are sort of our guiding principles of trying to improve the lives of Hispanics, and the areas that we sort of use as our test before to get involved in issues are education, trying to have Hispanics have higher degrees of education, involved in academia, you know, superintendents sitting on boards, school boards, and so forth, and accomplishing more in the area of education. The second area is business, trying to get financial capital into Hispanic communities, trying to raise household wealth of Hispanics, and without capital moving into our communities, we can't move forward. And the third area is statecraft. We're interested in getting more Hispanics in municipal offices, state legislatures, the United States Congress. We want to have a Hispanic president also.
Yeah.
So those are the three areas that we try to use as our guiding principle areas. And then we're involved in technology and telecom. In order for us to make progress in education, where we're deficient in household wealth and in public office, the only way that we're going to move Hispanics forward in those areas, it's going to involve the internet. There's no way that anything can, you know, that a people can move forward without being connected. So we're strong advocates for Hispanics being connected to the internet and having some degree of digital literacy. We study that issue and publish many papers on Hispanics' using technology, mobile devices, computers, hardware, software, to connect to the internet. We're also interested in getting Hispanics banked. We have about a fourth of our population that doesn't even have a bank account, and I would venture to say that about half of Hispanics are underbanked. That is, they're not utilizing financial institutions and financial systems to increase their, you know, wealth and move capital into our communities. A third area that we're involved in is civic engagement. That's getting the work there is mostly getting Hispanics to vote. Mm-hmm. Getting them involved in the public discourse and feeling their pressure at the ballot box. So that's one of area we're involved in several states that we focus on, mostly battleground states where presidential elections can be decided. Another area that you mentioned, Kathleen, is the area of nutrition, and mm-hmm. we're involved in health and nutrition. Hispanics disproportionately suffer from obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and we have recently, taken a position against the sugary drinks and processed foods that are really, really hurting. We believe hurting this country and hurting people, people's health, and causing a lot of loss of treasure in life. And then we have one final area that we're looking to get into. We haven't launched our policy program yet, but that's the area of climate change. We believe that when climate changes, people die. And it's something that I think that we think that people need to be aware of and need to try to do something about. So we have a pilot program that we want to do in Houston, and we're trying to get that funded now, sort of getting Hispanics involved in the issue of environmental environmental improvement and the issue of climate change and so forth. That's an area where Hispanics just aren't, and minorities in general are not really into that. It's amazing. If you went to an environmental meeting, it's you know, less diverse than a big oil meeting.
Right.
You probably see more diversity in a big oil meeting than you would in an environmental movement meeting. So those are really the core policy issues that we're involved in, and of course the issue of immigration and that really it falls under our civic engagement, where we, you know, have held some rallies around the country and trying to get people to vote and holding policymakers accountable on some of these immigration issues.
Well, first, Gus, let me tell you that I commend your caring about nutrition. I'm a diabetic, type 2 diabetic, and I think a lot of people don't realize that a lot of type 2 diabetes is the result of poverty. I grew up as a poor kid, and the two cheapest things you can buy are bread and sugar. And so poor people ate a lot of them. So that's an issue that's very important. It's become an epidemic. But I want to talk to you about immigration for a second, because I read on your website that you didn't seem to be particularly happy with the bill that the Senate has passed. What's the problem with the Border Security, Economic Opportunity, and Immigration Modernization Act of 2013? Boy, that's a mouthful. What problems do you have with it?
Well, you know, we don't agree with the militarization of the border. You know, all the data that we see right now, that immigration is pretty much leveled off. We seem to be at a standstill now. We, in that bill, you know, they have, it's about 14 years to pathway to citizenship. Yeah. You know, there's no guarantee that a lot of our citizens are going to live 14 years. But it's way too long, and it's cumbersome, and it, you know, it seeks to punish the undocumented, and we are just not in agreement with most of it. We saw that come out of the Senate, you know, and that's supposed to be the Democratic Party in control of the United States Senate, and you know, we got people like Chuck Schumer and others that are there. We felt, you know, gave away the farm on a lot of this, you know, and the bill came out horrible. And if you're going to start from a position of negotiation, then the Senate should start, you know, from our side, from the Democratic side, and when it gets over to the House. But now the bill is going to be coming out of the Senate, and the House is going to deal with it. Do you think that they're going to rubber stamp that bill? They're going to try to make it, you know, worse than it already is. So it's really a mess. And in terms of the administration, we just can't believe what they've done. You know, and again, a Democratic president who, in his first term, deported about 1.1 with 1.5 million. He's on pace to be to have deported 2 million by the end of this month. So it's just very distressing and, you know, disappointing.
Well, let me ask this question. Okay. Being on growing up on the border and being back, you know, now for about 6 years, I have a lot of friends that have done it the legal way. You know, that was 14 years having to stay in the United States, not being able to go into Mexico to see weddings or go to funerals because once they left, the process would have to start all over. They are very, very, I would say, adamant about the fact that, listen, I did it the legal way. And yet it seems like I'm being punished more than, you know, than the people who did it illegally. I mean, what do you say to these people who did do it legally, that did it lawfully, and yet, you know, do you push them up front before you do the pathway to citizenship for the other people, you know, for those who are came into the country illegally? What do you guys think about that?
Well, you know, I really, you know, I hate to see Hispanics, and I assume those are Hispanics that you're talking about.
Yes, they are. They're Mexican Americans.
You know, being going against other Hispanics, but you look throughout history, whenever a population has had a tragedy, there's always been people within those populations that aided and abetted the hurt of their own people. But yes, I mean, I would like to see both groups get their documentation, and you know, I imagine you know, the devil's in the details there, but I would like to see both of them, Kathleen, and get their documentation at the same time.
Well, it is tough. I mean, it's a tough issue because, you know, I know some of them that, you know, they wanted to go back, but they didn't want to do it legally. They wanted to be law-abiding citizens. And so it is a tough issue for them to accept that here's people who did it the wrong way, the illegal way. And I mean, it's very complicated because living on the border, you see three big issues that are very separate. You see border security, which is very, very different in a sense, yet we're connected. But border security, you know, I think it was in the year 2012, just through Douglas, 4,000 OTMs came through, and that's other than Mexicans, but I kind of think they're other than Latin Americans. They were from Afghanistan and China and Pakistan and Russia and, you know, India, and not necessarily good guys that want to come to start new careers or whatever, but had ties, were, you know, pedophiles, rapists, and stuff like that. So border security is, to me, a very kind of separate thing. I hate when they lump this all together. And then you have the drug cartels, which is terrorizing the border. And I've seen it and felt it and watched it outside my window, you know, where I lived, like five streets from the border, where you see the ultralights, you know, and the cannons that they go from AP across the line where they're, you know, throwing the drugs. So there's like three very, very intense issues coming together.
In terms of national security, we as a society have made a determination that certain things fall under the national security structure. I mean, you know, you can make a case that by not educating the children that that's a national security issue, but that's not what we typically define as national security. But for people wanting to come here to get jobs and the issue that you brought up, drugs. Drugs is an addiction problem, right? Why, if we would have taken the billions and billions and billions of dollars that we spent on drug enforcement and tried to put that money in hospitals, on advertising campaigns to prevent people from using drugs, wouldn't we be in a better place? It makes no sense for us to say that the drug problem is a national security issue, and that the immigration issue is a national security issue. That's not what's happening.
Well, you know, I have to agree with Gus on the fact that people that have gone, the question you asked, Kathleen, about people that have gone about it the right way, I think immigrants are very often their own worst enemy. You know, I grew up in an immigrant family. Both my grandparents were from Italy, And they didn't like other Italians. They didn't like the Irish coming over. They didn't like other Italians coming over. It's a typical thing to turn the immigrant population against new immigrants. And so I think you're right about that, Gus. I don't think that's any different than it's ever been in America. And I also agree with you about the drug thing. It's, you know, we're the people that use the drugs. We'll never be able to stop the flow of drugs into this country until we stop the demand for them. That we've got to do that.
There's going to be a tipping point here. Go ahead, Kathleen.
No, and I mean, you know, I understand what you guys are saying, but, you know, you got to be on the border. When I came back from the East, it was a changed world from where I had left it. And I came to a place where I would say, really, that the drug cartels control the border up to maybe 20 miles into the United States. And, I mean, it's gotten better now because there has been the increase in Border Patrol. There's the ultralights and the drones. But, I mean, literally, you guys, when you're sitting out your apartment window looking at an ultralight that's radioing down to the parking lot below you, and they're dropping a load, and then they go back to Mexico – there is the demand in the United States, definitely, and maybe we need to legalize it. But it creates an environment of lawlessness where the drug cartels control everything. And you know, we've got these guys in D.C., and this is kind of the basis of the show. You know, here I am kind of down on the border. You guys are within the Beltway. Where all of this lumping together, border security, drug issues, and immigration, it's not all one and the same. And so I guess I don't want to diverge from it, but, you know, I do feel for the people who did it the legal way. I mean, we're supposedly a country of laws. And when people take it, because it's not an easy path, it's not the easy way to go legally, and they do it, I feel for them, because kind of what we're saying is, well, you know, if you had done it legal, you know, you're going to be able to get amnesty. And why did you put yourself through? You know, a lot of people go back and forth. Sometimes they get caught. A lot of times they don't. I mean, it has gotten much tighter. When I got down to Douglas, I think within the first year, that was about 2007, just in a mile radius of 3 miles, they caught in the month of February 10,000 illegals coming across. And that sounds like crazy, but it's true. For every one you catch, 10 get through. So in a sense, anywhere else in the world, people control their borders, you know, and I guess
you guys, you call them illegals yourself or?
Well, no, undocumented workers, undocumented, oh, okay. Undocumented. What would you call them?
Because we had one guy, he calls them Cremalians, which is, I guess, criminal aliens. So he calls them.
And you know, we were talking on the last show that really is not a good word. You know, it's undocumented. What would you say? What do you guys call them? I mean, what is the political correct way? Is it the undocumented workers or undocumented?
Both.
Yes. Okay. Workers. And I do, and living in the border growing up, we had people, and I saw them work in the hospital. You know, these are poor people who just want a job or to learn a trade. Sometimes they don't even want to become Americans. They want to learn a trade to take back with them. In New York, there was a guy from Guatemala that he just wanted to learn how to make pizza so he could return. And that's another issue, the guest workers. I've seen coming back where we had maybe 24 farms and ranches outside of Douglas, now we're down to a couple because there is nobody who plowed the field. My son is not going to go and pick chili peppers, you know, but it's so they've gotten rid of the guest worker programs. And a lot of these, you know, we also take for granted that everyone wants to come over here and stay. Not all of them do. They want to come. They want to have a job that we need as Americans to have them do. And it's not, and I mean, I don't want to promote that only they can come and pick chilies, but it's something that's needed, and they do it, and now they can't, and now there's less and less ranchers, there's less and less farmers because of the issue. So it's a very complicated issue that just can't be lumped all into one thing like immigration reform. Do you know?
Well, maybe you make a good point there, Kathleen, that they should be separated, because this is the problem I have, and then we're going to let Gus talk a little bit, but this is the problem that I have. I don't understand why border security is an immigration issue, you know, why drugs coming across the border is part of the immigration debate. That's a law enforcement problem. I think if you're having problems with drug dealers, you have to leave that up to law enforcement. I don't think that you amend your immigration policy to try to control drugs.
Well, I think, Kathleen, they do, you know, I guess they do separate it out. And that's what the Republicans are trying to do, John Boehner, right now, right? He's saying that they want to deal with border security and militarization and that sort of thing first. They want to secure the border first, and then we can do whatever else we're, whatever the other things that we're trying to do. The country, I always begin this talking about immigration first by acknowledging, Native Americans, and I had this one chairman of a tribe, and he told me, Gus, if we would have had a good immigration policy to begin with, we wouldn't have all these problems. But as Michael was saying, all these groups, the Italians and the Irish, Eastern European Jews, all of these groups faced, a discrimination. You go back and read in the 1920s, you'll see articles talking about immigrants not wanting to speak the language, being unruly and not assimilating. But in those instances, they're talking about, Italians, Irish, Germans. They're not talking about Hispanics. This country needs this labor. In order for a country and an economy to move forward, you need growth. And we need skilled and unskilled labor. All of our economic analysis, everything, all the economic models that we run and everything, tells us that immigrants contribute more to the economy than they take out. And if you look at we're not always on the side of business, but we are pro-business. And what does business want? What does the United States Chamber of Commerce, typically a Republican organization and so forth, what do they want? They want the labor. They need it, and our business needs it. And if we have no immigrants in this country, then we're going to cease to grow as a country. Change is always difficult, and I think that's what you see. But it's amazing to see people in this country talk so negatively about immigrants, not realizing how bad economically this country will suffer without immigrants.
Well, again, I got to agree with you on this, Gus, that I work with Native Americans too, and it's all a matter of perspective. I have a T-shirt that I got when I worked on reservations in Minnesota with a band of Apaches on the front that says defending America against terrorists since 1492. And,
That's great.
Yeah, it depends. It depends on your perspective. And we are a country of immigrants. And when you talk about people that have gone through the system legally, Kathleen, what I will tell you is that my grandparents got off a boat from Italy and they signed documents at Ellis Island and then they were here. They didn't have to wait 14 years. They didn't have to do anything. They just showed up. So what's legal one day and legal the next are very different things and always have been.
Well, then maybe we shouldn't have a legalized way to become an American citizen. I just feel for those people who did it the right way and now see that, at least put them up front, push them up to the front of the pathway. And if they've been, if they've done it legally and it's their third year or their fourth year or their 10th, maybe they should be at the front when we do this immigration thing, because at least reward them for being legal, because I can see down the road, what's the use in trying to do it the right way? If we actually kind of get, punished for it. So, they're kind of a group that exists, and I think they just don't have a voice, the guys who do it legally. So that's just my comment. I think that before we do anybody else, that those guys who did it legally should be up in the front to get their citizenship. And I was interested because you wrote in the article that 30% of the immigrants start a business than those born in the United States.
Yeah, Gus, immigrants are extremely entrepreneurial, here in this region, here in D.C. and Maryland and Virginia. It's Hispanics that are really generating most of the new businesses. It's just extremely entrepreneurial. To get up and leave leave some pueblo and from my country in Nicaragua to come to the United States, you know, it takes a bit of ambition and a bit of you know, hard workers. You know, why does the United States need these labor? You know why? Because they work hard.
I believe
and,
that.
And that's what's happening around the country. It's something we haven't really talked about, but a lot of this friction is being generated. Hispanics are going into areas where they haven't been before, you know, going into some remote area in Georgia and Pennsylvania, places where they've never seen a Hispanic populations like that. And that's creating a friction. But you know what? These Hispanics are really working people under the table. I mean, they just you know, really, really hard workers and very entrepreneurial. And yes, they are starting a lot of businesses in this country.
I want to ask you when we come back, we're going to take a little break. But when we come back, I want to ask you about Republicans because they really seem to be the problem on Capitol Hill right now. And when we get back, we're going to let Gus talk because Kathleen still thinks she's the boss.
You just want to shut me up.
She's my boss.
No, we like it.
She's my boss, Gus. I've resigned myself to that fact. But anyway, here's a song about immigration by a singer-songwriter named Tom Russell from El Paso.
By the way.
And he asks an interesting question. Who's going to build your wall? Back in a few minutes. We're back, and we're here with Gus West from the Hispanic Institute. The Border Patrol has actually come and picked up Kathleen, so you won't be hearing her the rest of the show.
But that was your influence you used from D.C. You were trying.
That's exactly right. We called them during the intermission. But anyway, Gus, I want to ask you about Republicans because this week, on Friday, actually, the president went and met with protesters who are on the mall, who are actually having a hunger strike in an effort to get the Republican Party in the House to deal with immigration. So what's the Republican problem? They're supposed to be out there courting Hispanics because this is such an important voting bloc now, but it seems like they just can't get it together. What do you think their problem is?
Well, yes, they seem to have gone against a lot of groups, you know, and they seem to be getting a smaller and smaller tent there with the Republican Party. But in terms of the immigration issue, you know, I've already mentioned earlier in the conversation that this president will have Democrat will have deported 2 million by the end of this year. We see, you know, both parties really, you know, doing a lot of damage, and so, you know, we've sort of wanted to maintain a bipartisan stance on this because, you know, we never would have dreamed that, you know, that Kathleen, that your former governor there would come to Washington D.C. and run Homeland Security. They had so many weapons at their disposal that they could have used. You know, they with the executive authority, they had, you know, things like deferred action, extended voluntary departure and deferred enforcement departure. There was a lot of things that this president could have done, parole in place, all of these things that he could have used his executive authority and relieve some of that pressure. The amount of families that have been destroyed by these deportations, it's, you know, and if you, you know, if you ever were around these people and saw what happened to some families, it was pretty devastating and is devastating, and it continues to happen. And now Janet Napolitano, I couldn't believe that they would, you know, she would go to California where we have 30-something% Hispanic, and they would put her in charge of the college system in California. That, to me, was outrageous. But the Republican Party.
So we can't blame this. We can't just blame this on the Republicans.
Exactly. I think it's both parties that have really done. You know, and quite frankly, if you had to say who's damaged the Hispanics, immigrants the most, you have to lay that at the White House. It's Obama.
So is that going to make a difference politically in 2016? Or
I think life is judged on a curve,
you know, or as long as we're not as bad as the Republicans, are we going to squeak by, or you think Hispanics will hold us against the Democratic Party?
I think, you know, Hispanics really have supported Secretary Clinton, but she's going to have to answer to that. She was Secretary of State. She wasn't head of the Homeland Security, but at the same time, she's a part of this administration, and, you know, they're going to need more from her, and that's why I think that, you know, a lot of this, just as the Republican Party is being torn in two different directions with the right-wing crazies, Tea Party people, just as they're being ripped apart, the same thing will happen, because it's a symbiotic relationship. You know, as we all know, and there's nowhere in the Constitution where they mention anything about the two-party system or parties, but they become a way of life. And if you have Republican Party bifurcating the way they are, then you're going to have that happen in the Democratic Party, and that's why you're seeing. I mean, you know, all the buzz last few weeks has been about Lizzie Warren, the senator from Massachusetts, and all the buzz that she's creating out here, and she's definitely going to move that whole debate to the left. All the issues that she has with the financial services companies, which there again, it was immigrants and Hispanics that were disproportionately in this whole foreclosure crisis and subprime lending and all of that stuff hurt Hispanics. And anyway, I think that party has problems, you're going to see that come over to the Democratic side also. So.
You know, I just want to mention, too, out there to the audience that I know there's got to be people who have an opinion of this. So give us a call at 888-429-5471, or you can Skype us at BBS Radio 2. And I'd also like to mention that the show is available for free downloads on iTunes. And also, we were just picked up by Stitcher.com and also Fall River Community Radio. So I just wanted to thank those Stitcher and Fall River Community Radio for having us on their schedules. And so let me ask you a question. Now, in my family, you know, I grew up where my grandfather had a picture of, you know, of Jesus Christ, the Pope, and John F. Kennedy, and we were always Democrats. And yet I found when some of my family became successful, they became diehard Republicans. Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, the Republican Party is always been a very pro-business party, of course, you know, always advocating for lower taxes and rights of business owners and pro-business policies and so forth. So I think that has a lot to do with it. You know, there's certain and then within the Hispanic, you know, certain Hispanics of different backgrounds, of obviously the Cuban Americans have been historically been very Republican. I think Obama was able to get a majority in Florida of the Cuban American vote for and the first Democrat to ever do that since Castro and since their revolution there. But by and large, right now though, Kathleen, when we register Hispanics, if we register four, three of them are registering Democrat. And right now, you know, Hispanics vote between 60% and 70% for Democrats, and that's where elections are lost and won. If a Republican can get 40%, they typically can win an election in some of the big states where Hispanics are. And if a Democrat can get 70%, then they typically can win an election, and that's why you know, almost everybody believes that W won his that election, won those elections because he was able to bridge that and bridge the Hispanic community and get close to 40%. Hispanics can decide, you know, elections now. In a lot of states. In 2008, North Carolina, you know, went razor thin to Obama, and both the White House and most demographers will tell you that it was the Hispanic vote that changed that. And so in virtually almost every battleground state, and, you know, there's typically 10 to 13 around Election Day that remain competitive. And within all those states, Hispanics can turn an election. And of course, there's states where they're undeniably the powerhouse. You know, states like Nevada, which is a battleground state, a New Mexico battleground state, Colorado battleground state. And Hispanics are driving those three states bluer and bluer. Florida now is still pretty even there as a battleground state, but you know, now the big targets are, you know, your state, which people are thinking that becomes a battleground state in a few years, and of course Texas being the big one, where it really doesn't make sense a state so packed with so many Hispanics that state can remain red, and most people believe that state will move more purple in the future. So, I mean, the Republicans, yes, when we do get older and gain wealth, there's more chance that we would migrate to the Republican Party. But by and large, Democrats have a pretty strong hold on the Hispanic vote at this moment. You know, not as strong as the African American vote, you know, which is in the 90 percentile. But the sheer numbers of Hispanics, that 70% is going to, you know, is going to be more than the African American 90% eventually. So it's just becoming the most significant vote, and for a party to play it the way they're playing it is ridiculous. You know, they do make some inroads. I mean, they put, you know, a Marco Rubio up there and a Ted Cruz and Sandoval, the governor of Nevada, and on, they will you know, try to appeal to Hispanics by putting those candidates up on the top of their tickets, but at this time it's not too promising for Republicans to win.
Let me ask you, Wes, given that, how do you advise people as somebody with the Hispanic Institute, so that you don't end up in the situation that African Americans have been complaining about for the last 25 years? Ever since I've been in the Democratic Party, African Americans have complained that the Democrats have taken them for granted, because on the basis of really similar issues, civil rights issues, as you point out, 90% of African Americans are Democrats, so the Republicans don't have to pander to them. How do you keep that from happening to Hispanics?
It's really is a big problem, and something that we think about continuously. You know, to be taken for granted by a party is problematic, and you're right that has happened to African Americans, and is happening to Hispanics. I mean, we control the White House, and we're still getting immigrants and our relatives deported, and we control the Senate, and you know, we get an immigration bill that just came out of there. So, it is a big problem. My advice to Hispanics is not to be partisan, not to go to the Democrat, not to give their vote to Democrats without gaining something. And we are very pro bipartisan, nonpartisan And it would, you know, behooves us to be in both parties and have both parties have to compete for our vote. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that in the future. It is a big problem being taken for granted.
Well, let me ask this before we run out of time. You know, one thing I do really support is the Dream Act, because I've seen sometimes I think that these children who are born over here and go to school or go and serve in the military are almost more patriotic than those kids that were born here, you know, and have so much privileges. Are you guys involved in that, the Dream Act?
We have supported it. It's not our sole focus. A lot of the other organizations here in Washington, D.C. have done a tremendous job, Hispanic organizations, in advocating for the Dream Act, and it's not one that we've been overly involved in. Our biggest issue in terms of immigration are the deportations and us trying to press this administration to have, you know, to do a better job, but that hasn't happened. And again, this president, you know, when Clinton left office, he got inducted to the African American whatever it was, museum or whatever. But this president will never be the first Hispanic president. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a controversial issue in Maryland. You probably know this, Gus, but Maryland passed the Dream Act, and it was very controversial in Maryland. And I really, you know, I agree with Kathleen. This is something that we have to support. Education is an important thing for young people, regardless of what their immigration status is. So we're big supporters of the Dream Act. And, you know, just to not to digress, but, you know, the thing you said before about getting older and becoming a Republican, you know, Winston Churchill said that a young man who's a conservative has no heart and an old man who's a liberal has no brains. So I think, you know, as you get older, you do change. But Kathleen, do you have something else you want to?
Before
we sign off in a while, I don't want to cut you short because I know you'll call me later and give me a hard time.
No, I mean, I was just going to make a point with Gus that in Douglas, I think we have the highest rate of diabetes among all the border communities from California all the way, you know, through Texas. And I think 17% of our high school students are, you know, seriously overweight. So the whole health thing is, I mean, I remember when I went to Douglas, I was going to work for the hospital, and I went and I got the cheapest thing was, I think it was Fritos with beans and cheese and two tortillas and a big Coke, and it was like $2.99. So, you know, it's very, when you're poor, that's the way to fill up, you know, and unfortunately it causes so much trouble. So I'm really happy that you guys are getting involved in that. That's a big thing, you know, also along the border.
It's been a big price to pay
for it.
Yes, a big price to pay.
It is. It's a big price to pay.
No, but I meant politically here with us taking on the sugary drinks and everything.
Oh,
you wouldn't believe how Coca-Cola and Pepsi, what they've tried to, you know, how they've tried to hurt our organization and go after us. You know, I guess that they expect we're a Hispanic organization that we should be, you know, they feel like they own all those. It's been tough.
I imagine. You know, I'll tell you, if I'm going to have a Coke, I would rather have a Coke made in Mexico than a Coke made in the United States because there's a lot more sugar. It tastes better. But, you know, it's definitely true. And you know,
Mexico's going after them now, too, though. Mexico's
are they really?
Good. They're really going at Coca-Cola, spending millions and millions of dollars on lobbying teams. A lot of the Washington lobbying teams are going down to Mexico to help them with, Mexico's getting ready to tax. All Latin America's really turning on sugary drinks. It's not good for Latin America.
No, it's not good.
Anyway.
Tastes good. That talk about addicting, that is definitely addicting. The Cokes made in Latin America are just a totally different taste. But I want to thank you so much, Gus, for coming on our show. And I mean, I feel like I wish we could talk for a couple more hours because I feel like we just kind of touched on all these very important issues. But we hope you'll come back and you weren't, you know, like you know, scared by Senator Brown or anything, because surely you know that I think you're a great guy, and I think the Hispanic Institute is doing a great job. And I'm just kind of trying to give you guys a kind of an idea of what's happening here on the border. And maybe you guys should come, and visit us out here. Both you and Michael should come down, and I'll take you a tour. I have a nice tour I can give you of the border.
Yeah, we
heard
about your tour, Kathleen, where the Border Patrol follows you. I'm not sure I want to go on that tour. But, Gus, I need to ask you one question before I go, because you live in the District of Columbia and you understand that we don't have the same rights that everybody else does. We're trying to become a state. And while we're doing this, Puerto Rico has also recently passed by 61%, a referendum to become a state, and their resident commissioner is pushing hard for statehood. So does the Hispanic Institute, do you have an issue? Do you have a stand on Puerto Rican statehood?
We don't. We do not get involved in that issue. It is a real tough one, and that's not why we're not involved. It just, you know, there's so many sides to it, and yep. We just don't feel that we should be opining. We do have our chief of staff is Puerto Rican, and she has her opinion, but we just don't think it's something that we need to opine on.
What do you think of being, as far as living in the district, what do you think about D.C. becoming state and you being able to have a vote?
I supported that, you know, from the beginning. I was talking about it, you know, a long time ago, as many others were. In recent years, I haven't spent that much time doing it. I've been trying to get the district powers other ways. You know, we need to. I think the district needs to utilize its location and try to somehow leverage where we are, our influence here. And you're going to see the city seems to be, there's, you know, a lot of growth here. A lot of people are being more and more interested in this city. And I think that you are going to see some really good policymakers like Michael and others that are going to really lift this city and move it forward. But I do support us having some sort of representation here.
Well, that's great.
Well, thanks. And thanks for joining us, Wes.
Gus,
I'm sorry.
That's
Gus,
fine. I enjoyed the conversation.
Wes.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks so much. And I hope you come back and join us again. And we'll make sure that Kathleen doesn't talk the whole show. We'll let you say a few things. But I'm kidding, of course. And
I know
and
you are.
Appreciate
I'm just passionate.
That. I know you are passionate, and this is a passionate issue. And next week we're going to try to have somebody on with a different view so that we can get a conversation started about this. So thank you, America. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks, Gus West and the Hispanic Institute. We appreciate all the good work that you're doing. And
yeah,
join us next week.
Thanks, America. And tune in, because it should be interesting.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.